also, though, now, let's assume the landing site is clear, weather's fine, the shuttle's coming in. I would guess, what's the distance, Richard, once it starts its re-entry? Are we talking about, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles, or does it kind of like drop in it's going to be?
You're talking thousands of miles. This thing is starting re-entry over the Pacific.
So it could be coming through all kinds of weather for
us. No, you're really up at 400,000 feet. You're still in space, essentially. You don't get down to the lower atmosphere until the final few miles. So it's basically the local weather in Florida is the big concern. You're flying above weather all the way in till just a few minutes out.
All right, Ken, tell us what it's like for reentry with these astronauts. What are they doing? What are they dressed in? Are they wearing their helmets? Are they all just completely encased? What's going on?
Well, they actually have a pressure suit that they're wearing. And that would be to protect them in the event that they had any kind of a puncture of the pressure vessel itself. They would still be safe inside of their spacesuits.
If you lost the air in the cockpit, in other words.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you, Richard.
That's what I'm here for.
That's why we have him here.
Richard puts it into the words that layman can understand.
He sure does. That's why he's so successful on this program, Ken.
Absolutely. Anyway, and with regards to the entry, they're still going to be inside their spacesuits. They had them on during launch and then upon landing. And as Richard well pointed out, this space shuttle is like a gliding rock, and it's coming in extremely high, and it's going to drop straight down, but at a very steep angle into Florida. And then just so the local weather is the only thing they're going to have to look out for.
How do you feel about this planned landing, Ken? I mean, do you feel comfortable here with this?
Well, if you go back and look at after we had the Apollo 1 fire, which I was there for, and then we had the still trying to maintain the schedule to get to the moon and back within the one decade, the first flight we had after that was probably the safest flight there would be. And if I was given the opportunity to choose which flight I would have gone on with the shuttle, I would have chosen this one, because you better believe we checked every single possibility.
Me too, Ken.
Say again?
This is the one I would like to be on, because everybody looked at everything.
That's right. But they missed a spacer, either that or it vibrated out during.
Well, what they do is they vibrate out, and
right.
We've never had the opportunity, you know, speaking from NASA's point of view, these things are not for heat, they're for chatter. When the shuttle goes into orbit on those rockets, George, particularly those two solid rocket boosters on each side, there is a hell of a vibration. And Wayne Hale was actually saying with awe, I mean, here's a guy who's been with the shuttle program since its beginning, as long as Ken was, and he's still there, unlike Ken going on to other things. He said he learned the other day when they were doing the X-band radar tracking of the ascent into orbit, he said, I didn't know you could see the shock waves go through the vehicle on radar. That means there are rippling waves. This thing is acting almost like a living organism as it goes into space because of the vibrations and the shock loads and the aerodynamics. And all that motion basically makes these tiles move one against the other. So to prevent the tiles from chipping, I come back to how incredibly fragile that system is. They have these little spacers called gap fillers made of a ceramic cloth stuck in between the tiles. They don't need them for that chatter effect on the way down. It's much smoother on reentry than going into orbit. But they don't want them sticking out, and that's why Steve Robinson went out on the end of the arm and plucked the two out with his glove. Let me ask Ken a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Ken, since they didn't have the arm mobility then, and they were looking at doing this with an MMU, which is really a backpack with jets, weren't they concerned that you would inadvertently smash up against the bottom of the shuttle simulator and make more gouges and have tiles fall off and all the awful things we thought might happen with Robinson?
Absolutely, Richard. One of the things that we did during that test, some 20-some-odd years ago, was to let me use the MMU, of course, on 1G, I couldn't carry around 600 pounds. I had to have me suspended it to see how close I could get. Did I have to retract the MMU's control arms to get them out of the way for me to get close enough to use my arms?
Oh, those are the two little arms that stuck out in front of you, like little armchair arms?
Right, and that's where my controls are to operate the MMU, your roll pitch on one side and your translations on the other. any rate, we found that we could get real close, but it was a pilot technique that would have to have been practiced. I think that when you asked earlier, George, about the weight, the problem about weight really was having to carry an MMU on board for being able to get away further away from the space shuttle and then fly around with an MMU. So you're talking about an extra 600 pounds there, not just the weight of the tile repair kit.